Alan pointed out, I'm Paul Tatey. I'm going to give a little bit more introduction, how I wound up here. Some of you might recognize me as being on the stewardship committee. Some of you might recognize me as helping run the soundboard. I wish I could do that more often. Some of you might recognize me from the coffee night. And hopefully this fall I'll try to set that up again. And I hope most of you recognize me as the father of Chloe and Duvessa. Well, last year my appendix ruptured. And whilst I was recuperating, the good reverend came out to pay me a visit. And anyone who spent any time with me, I only talk about certain topics ad nauseum.
Excuse me, I don't think the amplification is working. I'm having trouble in the first row. Is it working?
Yeah, there we go. Is that better?
I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. Thank you. I appreciate that. So as I was saying, quantum mechanics, multiple world theory, string theory, toxins, biochemistry, and the Godfather is probably the topics I talk about the most. So the Reverend was so impressed with my general knowledge of cosmology, he asked me if I would be willing to do a sermon, because apparently the congregation has voiced an interest in science-based sermons. And in my drug-induced stupor, I jumped at the chance. So I asked him, I said, Reverend, how long does a sermon need to be? And he said, well, between 18 and 22 minutes. Less than 18 minutes, people feel that they're being cheated. More than 22, it drags on, especially in the summer. So Eileen said, how many sermons do you want him to do? Because apparently I talk a lot. I wish I would have timed this out a little bit better, so please bear with me a little bit. I know Toastmasters say, never apologize before you speak. I don't follow Toastmasters all the time. So where do we begin? Strings, the very smallest form of matter and energy that could possibly exist. And I was trying to find a way to demonstrate how small a string is. And the only thing I found is that a string compared to an electron, which is one of the subatomic particles, is 3.4 times 10 to the 24th times smaller. That's meaningless. That doesn't mean anything. A grain of sand to the sun is 6.9 times 10 to the 11th power. So one is 24th, one is 11th. That is unimaginably different. So I'm sorry, I can't find a way to describe or try to visualize how small a string is. But the interesting thing about the string is that it doesn't exist in our dimension the way that we understand it. We're familiar with length, width, height, and duration, or time. But string theory and multiple world theory also says that there has to be 10 dimensions. So we could account for four. Where's the other six? Apparently, the theory is that these six dimensions are bundled up so small that only the strings could interact with them, and that the way the string vibrates determines what kind of particle is produced from it, quarks. Or there's another theory that says there's something before quarks, but the general accepted theory is quarks. Up quark, down quark, top quark, bottom quark, charm quark, strange quark. I always feel like Dr. Seuss when I go through that list. Yeah, I don't know what any of them do. But anyway, they do combine to create electrons and protons and neutrons, the building blocks of everything. So from strings, we have the subatomic particles, we have the atomic particles. And of course, we always draw the circles with the orbits, and that's not how they are. The electron exists in a cloud. It's a probability. It's in all places at once. And we don't think that way. We don't experience reality that way. But at the quantum level, that's how it is. And I know when I talk about this, I get asked two questions all the time. One, is this going to be on the test? No, there is no test. I'm not a teacher. Actually, I have very little qualifications to speak on these topics other than a general interest. And two, it's how these egghead scientists know all this stuff. Well, 18 to 22 minute time limit, I figured, let me see how long it takes me to describe how light behaves like a particle or a wave, depending upon whether it's measured or observed. And that took me 11 minutes. Yeah, so if you're interested, I could talk to you after the service. I could guide you to certain books. I could guide you to certain websites. It's all laid out there. So okay, so we have strings, we have molecules, You know, we all remember the periodic table, and we always thought of it as some dusty old knowledge that we have to memorize. But actually, that's everything that is. If you really think about it, that periodic table, that's everything that exists. Everything that you're made out of, everything that you've ever ingested, everything that you've ever rode in or sat on or saw or heard, that's made out of those elements. Now, the question is, where do those elements come from? But I'll get to that in a moment. Now, I know I've talked about this demonstration to a few people, and I know they're very interested in seeing it. If you combine enough hydrogen, hundreds and hundreds of trillions of tons of hydrogen, it will collapse and form a star like our sun. Alan, if I could get your help. Alan's going to become the sun, if you could hold that up. That ball is exactly 9 inches in diameter. And at our scale, the Earth, originally I was going to use a BB from a BB gun. I hope I don't get excommunicated for saying BB gun in a Unitarian church. But anyway, I wanted to use that, but BBs are 4.5 millimeters in diameter. That's way too big. What I have here is a little ball of tinfoil. If you poked a hole in a paper with a push pin, this would fit neatly inside it. So to scale, that's how big the Earth is to the sun. So when you did that diorama back in middle school or grade school and you ran down to the craft store and you got a bunch of styrofoam balls and painted the big one yellow and you labeled them all out, well, of course that wasn't to scale, but this is to scale. So that's 9 inches, this is 2 millimeters. Does anybody have a watch with a second hand? Anyone with a watch with a second hand? Reverend, could you count this out for me and begin now? Okay, Reverend, how long did that take me?
13 seconds.
Everybody remember that, 13 seconds. This is the orbit of the Earth compared to the sun, 80 feet. I measured it out a couple weeks ago. This is how far we orbit the Earth on average, because it's not a complete perfect circle. It's more of an oval. So every time you get sunburned, this is how far away we are from the sun when you get that sunburn. Now, if you imagine less than the width of my pinky from this little tinfoil holding up another orb about one-third the size, that would be the moon. And that's as far as humanity has ever traveled under its own power. That's it. That's as far as we've ever gone. Now, as the Reverend said, 13 seconds for me to transverse this 80 feet. If I was traveling at the speed of light in our scale model, it would take me 8.5 minutes to cover the same distance. So that means every time you look up at the sun, you're not looking up at the sun, you're looking up where it was 8.5 minutes ago. I know, that I have trouble understanding that myself. Now I have to refer to my cards. If we continued our model, Saturn would be 768 feet away from Alan. Thank you, by the way. Let's give the sun a big round of applause for helping us out. Pluto would be 3,186 feet out. Now you might say, well, Paul, why did you pick Saturn? Our sun is a medium size. There are monsters out there. There's CV Canis Majoris, which if you would put into our solar system, would cover from the sun out to Saturn. That's how big that star is. I mean, that's just unimaginably big. Okay, and by scale, the Earth is 24,000 miles in circumference, and the sun is 2.7 million miles in circumference. So the sun fits into the Milky Way, which is our galaxy. It has roughly 100 billion stars in it. Now again, 100 billion, that's hard for us to understand what that means. It sounds more like a national debt deficit, 100 billion. If you would take every star in our galaxy and turn it into a grain of sand, you would have a sandbox 30 meters by 30 meters by 1 meter deep. So next time you're out at the beach, maybe on the 4th of July, pick up a handful of sand, throw it out, and figure, you know, that's only a few hundred thousand at that. That's just mind-boggling. How many galaxies are there? Well, the estimate, the agreed-upon estimate, is about 100 billion galaxies, which I think is kind of neat. 100 billion stars in our galaxy, 100 billion galaxies. Now, how did they determine this? Hubble telescope. We've all seen the pictures. We've all loved it. They did an experiment called the Hubble Deep Field. And what they try to do is find the most unimaginably empty piece of space they could find. They turned the sky into a grid of 12 million squares, and they picked one of those squares. So you can imagine how small that is. And they looked at it for almost a week, and they found that there were 10,000 galaxies in that tiny little dot alone. That's unimaginable. And they're looking back millions of years. Again, from Earth to the Sun, that's 8.5 minutes. So you can just imagine how far away these galaxies are. And they use that as an estimate to come up with their 100 billion. Now, our galaxy is part of the local group, which is about 54 galaxies. It's about 40 million light years long. So in our scale, I couldn't even put it on Earth. That's how big it is. Now, the local group is also part of the Virgo supercluster, which is about 110 million light years long. I'm sorry if this gets a little boring, but it's hard to imagine this. The Virgo cluster is part of the Great Wall, which is 1.38 billion light years long. Past that, you'd have to go into filaments, and that is collections of galaxies which are tens of billions of light years long, and there's no structure that we found bigger than that other than the observable universe. Now, I say observable universe, I know there's a lot of questions, what's going on there? When the universe was created, and I'll get to that in just a moment, it expanded, and it's about 14 billion years old. And it's like, well, why is it bigger than 14? Well, space is expanding faster than the speed of light. And the latest estimate is observable universe is about 46 billion light years in diameter. The estimated, low-end estimated of the whole universe is 78 billion light years in diameter. Now, there are theories that say that our universe is infinite. And if it isn't infinite, this is the lower limit. This is as small as they could possibly make it. So going out from our universe, we discovered, thanks to string theory and thanks to M theory, that there are multiple universes. We're not all that there is. The lower limit on that is 10 to the 500th power. Again, I can't break that down. It's not because of the limits of your intelligence. It's the limit of my imagination. I just can't pick anything to show what is 10 to the 500th power. It's one with 500 zeros behind it, but that's meaningless to us. There might also be an infinite amount of multiple universes. There are four different types, however, of theories talking about the multiple universes. The one is that if the universe is infinite, if you have a Hubble space, and that means you cannot see past that, this is as far as you could possibly go to. So in our case, it's that 96 billion light years in diameter. If there's another Hubble space and another Hubble space, sooner or later you're going to find one that's exactly like yours. So it's kind of weird to think, I'm giving this sermon in another bubble universe, another section of the universe, ad infinitum. More people would have got that joke, I guess, in that one. The second one is the bubble universe. I'm sorry, I combined the terms. The bubble universe, and that you could think of as a kettle of boiling water, that the universe springs ex nihilo, out of nothing, out of the quantum froth, down in that string level, the universe pops up. And just like boiling water in a pot, these bubbles are coming up and bumping into each other. And again, some of them might be exactly like ours, and some of them might have radically different constraints than ours. And what I mean by constraints, I mean that they might not have gravity, or they might not have strong force, or they might not have weak force, or they might have different fundamental forces that we cannot imagine. The third type is the quantum mechanical multiple universe, and this is really strange, but there's a lot of science fiction out there, so if you're fans of that, this is going to sound like old hat, and that means that every time there's a decision, every time a possible outcome can happen, it does. So when I roll the die down in Atlantic City, which is a joke because I never gamble, but when I roll and the snake eyes come out, that happens here. But I just split the universe in every possible iteration. I rolled a 3 and a 4 and so on and so forth. And then the final theory is the ultimate ensemble. That means every possible universe that can exist, even if it's only mathematically based, does exist. And I find that quite perplexing, and I really don't understand it myself. Anyway, getting back to the beginning of time. In the 20th century, Albert Einstein came up with his general and special relativity that deals with gravity and it deals with objects and high speed. At the same time, Niels Bohr and Wolfgang Pauli and a few others came up with quantum mechanics, and that's describing the subatomic particles, which I was talking about earlier. The two didn't fit at all. Einstein was great for describing big things, except the beginning of time, and also black holes. Quantum mechanics was really good at describing small things and making predictions that everyone has come out correct so far. I mean, it's the most successful theory we've ever created. But it couldn't get back to the Big Bang, and it also fell apart at black holes. String theory came along and bridged these two together, at least it's attempting to bridge those two together. So the Big Bang happened, and it could have happened ex nihilo by itself, out of nothing, or two bubble universes might have bumped together. They're the two competing theories right now and created everything that we saw roughly 14 billion years ago. For the first 300 million years, it was so hot, there was no difference between energy and matter. It was just a soup, quantum froth, this rolling and imaginably hot. And then it cooled down. And for then the next 300 million years, stars started to form. Now, a quick show of hands. Is anybody wearing gold jewelry, watch, earring, wedding band? And any piece of gold, any piece of gold. Okay, remember that. Remember that. I'll get back to that. So, the universe cooled down. Hydrogen and helium were the only two elements that were created from this Big Bang. You go, well, wait a minute, you're talking about the periodic table. I know for a fact from high school I had to memorize all that junk. I mean, what are you talking about? Hydrogen and helium coalesced in the stars, just like our sun, and started to fuse these atoms together to create heavier and heavier elements. Only up until the element iron. Iron is a death sentence for a star. Once it creates iron, it explodes. Then you're thinking, well, wait a minute. We all showed, you know, I have gold. Where did this come from? If you have a star that is 3 to 8 times heavier than our sun, it goes supernova. That means when it collapses back in on itself, there's enough force to make it explode. This, and everyone who raised their hand, this was created by the act of a supernova. Pretty impressive, I think. It took a star, a very large star, to explode and create one of the most violent events in the universe to create all the heavier elements. And I'm just humbled by that. They asked Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's the current host of Cosmos, what is the most amazing fact that you know? And he said, I'm paraphrasing him, that we were once, everything that we are was created in the heart of a star. And had that star not died, we would never have been. So I'm also humbled by that. He also said that in his lobby of the planetarium he works is a 7-ton meteorite made of iron that they have on display. And he said, if you took all the hemoglobin from everyone in New York in the 5 boroughs and took all the iron out of it, you could reconstruct that 7-ton meteorite. It's the same material. There's no different. It's the same thing. Yeah, it's mind-boggling. Well, congratulations. We live in the stelliferous era of the universe. That means star-bearing. So from about 600 million years after the Big Bang up until about 100 trillion years from now, our universe will be creating stars. So future civilizations will be created just like ours, hopefully. However, it's not going to go that way. As Alan pointed out, the universe is not going to last forever. In a mere 3 to 5 billion years, that local group I was talking about, those 54 galaxies, the Milky Way and Andromeda are going to slam together. We're going to merge into one. Well, the future of the Earth, it's debatable. Also 3 to 5 billion years ago, I think this is remarkable that it dovetails in, the sun is going to swell into a red giant. And to make it fit into this room, it would have to touch my finger when I was standing in the back of the church. That's how big our sun is going to swell into a red giant. And of course, once it starts producing iron, it's going to blow up and be no more. And a mere 2 trillion years from now, we will only be able to observe those galaxies that are in the local group, because space is expanding faster than the speed of light. And all those galaxies that we look up and see, like Hubble Deep Field, they will be swept away further from us. So future astronomers, 2 trillion years from now, they will only see Andromeda, Milky Way, combined galaxies, and they will think that the universe is utterly and completely empty. They will not be able to see what we see. I know it's kind of depressing, but that's the way it is. Gray hair is depressing, but yet I deal with it. Okay, then we go into the degenerate era, and that is not about drinking and partying. It's when things start to fall apart, and that begins about 100 trillion years from now, and when stars cease to form because the matter has been separated from other matter so much that it can't recoalesce, and the universe will become a very dark and very cold place. It's theorized that photons will actually start to decay, and that will happen in 10 to the 34th. I don't know what that is. I've been trying to find out how big of a number that is. The black hole period will actually start just before that, 100 quadrillion years from now, or 10 to the 20th. Yeah, it's unimaginable. Nuclear decay, 10 to the 40th years from now, black holes evaporating. That means even black holes will disseminate. They will fall apart somewhere between 10 to the 60th to 10 to the 100th years from now. Don't worry, you won't have to witness that, I guarantee. So, the ultimate fate of the universe. We have some depressing, at least somewhat depressing, but I'm going to change that in just a moment. The big freeze, and the big freeze is the exact opposite of what you think it means. The big freeze happens when the universe is expanding so quickly that it's sticking everything onto it. Those strings can no longer vibrate in our subatomic. So everything is frozen into place. The analogy is if it flies on a windshield and it needs to fly, it could only fly 30 miles an hour, and the car's traveling faster than 30 miles an hour, like 60, it cannot escape the windshield. It's stuck there. So that's one version of the ultimate end of the universe. The other is a heat death. And again, heat death is exactly opposite of what you think it is. It means the universe just keeps on expanding forever, and everything becomes so isolated that even photons and electrons can't interact because they're too much distance between them and another photon or another electron. The big grip, that's sort of like the big freeze, but a lot faster, where the universe expands so fast that the subatomic particles can no longer orbit each other. They, too, are stretched apart by the expansion of space. And this expansion is being driven by dark energy. If there's any young people out here today, if you want to make a name for yourself, you figure out what dark energy is, you'll be smarter than Einstein and remember just like him. By the way, it's not that easy. Big crunch. This one seems to appeal to a lot of people. And that's where the universe slows down and starts to come back in on itself and crunches back down into a singularity again. Unfortunately, all observable facts say that that's not going to happen. So the big bounce, and that's when it collapses back in and expands again, sort of like a cosmic heartbeat. Probably not going to happen, sorry. Here's my favorite, metastability vacuum disaster. Now this, that's a great name, isn't it? And it's very hard to explain, but if the universe suddenly dropped to a lower energy state, you know, what are you talking about? Our universe might be held at an artificially high energy level. You could think of it like a tornado. It's a stable point far from equilibrium. Tornadoes dissipate. Well, our universe might do the same, and instantaneously we would just drop to a lower energy state. What that does, you could guess, and your guess is just as valid as anybody else in the field. I like to think that we would pop into a quantum froth and create something new. And then I came up with my own conjecture, and I, to my chagrin, I found out that this is one of the latest ones, and that's the Big Pop, where the universe is bound, and it will actually rip itself open and spill its contents out onto the end. I know, I heard the alarm, thank you. I know, I went a little bit over 22 minutes, but now, you said earlier, it's depressing. How are we going to deal with this? Well, here's my advice. It is a miracle that we exist. And I don't use that word lightly. I'm not very religious. But it is a miracle we exist. Our time here is limited. If there's someone you want to talk to, call them today. If there's something you want to do, start planning it today. If there's somebody that you love, you tell them today, because we might not have that opportunity. I hope I didn't put too many people to sleep, and I thank you for your time.